Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh my goodness. I hope you're singing along with me. Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Steel Talk, and I am your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do, is be here with you on a Sunday night. So thank you for sticking and staying with us here at WCCO Radio. My goodness, we have a great lineup tonight, and it just blows my mind how many things are constantly happening. Of course, you're going to hear the other voice. It's Jonathan Lowe. They call you J-Lo, or used to call you J-Lo. Is that still one of your...
No, that's still a thing. That's still a thing. Depending on what quarters of the world you ask my name, kind of like Candyman. Don't say it three times, or he'll come and bug you.
Yeah, well, there you go. Oh, my goodness, Jonathan, it's good to see you. I am actually in studio.
Yes.
How about that, right?
Surprise, surprise, everybody.
Man, I couldn't do it from home today, and I'm just really happy to be in the studio to see you and look around at all of the surroundings and say, yeah, okay, it's the same.
The ancient, decrepit WCCO
studios. Did you say decrepit?
Yes.
Do not call this decrepit. I can show you decrepit, brother, okay? No, that's not right. That is so not right. But I will say this. It's good to be in studio and to really get a chance to see Jonathan, because he and I have been working together for how many years now? Would you say 12?
I've been here for 13, and there was a period where I wasn't working on Sunday nights for a few years, but now I'm back on Sunday. So I'd say out of the 13, I'd probably say about 8 to 9.
Yeah. Okay, so you are into sports for real. I mean, that's,
yes.
Is that your dream job, is to be a sports announcer?
It's one of them. I've had many dreams over my life.
Oh, tell me one.
No.
Come on.
That's okay.
Share it.
That's okay.
You can do
this
it.
This is
Jonathan,
this is not,
seriously.
This is not Jonathan's dreamland hour.
Yes, it is.
No, we're okay. We're okay.
Take an aspirin and get it done.
Wait a minute. Weren't you supposed to be at home tonight? Why are you here?
Exactly. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that tonight. You know, I look, everyone, I contacted Jonathan like at the last minute saying, hey, dude, you know, I'm coming in. I'm on my way in.
And usually we text each other I text Geraldine to let her know, hey, I've got everything set up. You can go ahead and call in or get, you know, plug in basically so we can get the show ready. And you texted me on my way in, and I'm like, wait, what? What does that mean? Wait, huh? It's
you should
on
look,
in.
Yeah, make
wait,
sure you smile
don't you mean
when
home?
You say that. Dude. Like,
on my way home, but no, on in, I, huh? So, yes. So when you showed up, I was like, okay. It was correct. It was accurate. On my way in.
Wow. On your way in. Yeah, that's what I said. On my way in. That's it. I didn't say, I'm coming in tonight. I just say, hey, I'm on my way in. I'm sure you probably went, what? What and why? Jonathan has a hard time with me from time to time.
No.
But not too often.
No.
Not too often. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on. You're a truth sayer. Come on. Come on. You can spit it out.
No.
Say yes.
Never.
Yeah, do it. Just do it.
Say maybe not never. But
there
no.
you go. Yeah, you got there, didn't you? You better had. Seriously, that really messed with you. We have a great lineup tonight, you guys. Oh, my goodness. We've got Michael C. Reichardt, a doctor, PhD in case, executive director, Center for the Study of Boys and Girls Lives at the University of, I'm sorry, lives at the University of
Pennsylvania. No, lives.
It is, lives.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
The boys and girls lives at the University of Pennsylvania. You know, my daughter went to the University of Pennsylvania. She got her undergrad and PhD.
That's right.
From there, so. She just loves that school. I don't blame her. It just was a perfect fit. Do you think now all these students are, you know, graduating these days? We know most of the graduations are nearly over. But I'm just wondering, do they start to think about college like back in October of the year before? Or do they say, no, I'm really going to start paying attention to schools maybe in January?
I think that I think that it varies for some people, because some people don't really – they want to get through high school and they want to get through the present before they even think about doing that. But if you're applying to colleges, you got to do that as soon as you can. I'm trying to remember when I was in school, I want to say we really started thinking about it as a family, my parents and I, kind of in junior year. You know, maybe midway through junior year, hey, you really got to start thinking about this and thinking about where you might want to go. And I didn't take any college visits, I didn't go during my senior year out to campuses and look at different colleges. We kind of did that a little earlier, but informally, just kind of did a road trip and visited some colleges at that point. But as far as those official college visits to go see the dorms and all that, I didn't really do that my senior year. If you do that, you probably have to know where you're going to go by the time your senior year starts.
Right. Exactly. It used to be that there were so many students that were able to access information, like get the knowledge, take a bit of the knowledge from those that talk to the students about the options.
Oh, guidance counselors.
Guidance counselors, yes. Thank you. And do we still have guidance counselors in school today?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay, so yeah. they were so integral. And I said to myself, I'm not sure what I want to do, Mom, and I think I just want to get married and have children. I literally told my mother that in the 10th grade. And she said, no. You'll be going to college. All of our children are going to college, right? I don't care if you got to scrape and crawl into the building. You got to go. So there you go. It's not easy, but it sure is necessary.
Well, and for people that are thinking about that, another thing that you want to know early is if you need to apply for scholarships, if you need to apply for financial aid to help you with those tuition bills, because the government does not have let's hold off on this. When it comes to that stuff, we're not talking about the debt ceiling. This is a different thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the debt ceiling and the budget, we'll just wait till the last minute. No. When you are applying for something from the government, they want something snappy. Yeah. They want something like yesterday.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how the young people today are dealing with it, because so much has been taken away from children who lost their parents. You know, I remember when my father was killed by a drunk driver and my brothers were in college at Purdue University, and it was very challenging for them to try to figure out how to maneuver through those opportunities. You got to get on them. You can't just wait. You got to get on them. So yeah. Congratulations to all of those who graduated. I'm just having a chance to say that. And God bless you, because I sure didn't want to go to college. I mean, I was fighting.
And there's another thing, and I've tried to reach out to this group, and I hopefully can do that. Try it again and hear back from them. But one thing that people don't talk about as much is gap year, is possibly doing a gap year after your high school year. And there is actually an association out there that helps people find stuff to help them with their gap year. My mother told me about this about 8-9 months ago. I had no idea that this existed.
Oh yeah, it's been around, man.
And so
great thing to do, especially if you're not quite sure, you're not quite ready to go from home to college.
Yes, and so hopefully I'll reach out to them and get in touch with them so we can they can tell people more about that, because I think that's important to know.
It is. And all you got to do is look it up, because there are famous children that have done it, like President Obama's oldest daughter. She had a gap year. You know, that's important. You get it. I've always said here at CCO, every child, every teenager, every adult in America should at least go to one other country and try to increase your cultural intelligence. Because if you never go anywhere, then you'll never know. There you go. I suppose it's time to take a break, isn't it?
We can do that. Yep.
We'll do that. We'll be back in a moment.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. It is now 7:20. Make that 7:21 here in the studio at WCCO Radio. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. I truly do love being here with you. And Jonathan and I were just talking about some things in our world,
don't
you know, just
the
life stuff, you know.
Coming back with that music into the show has given me a chance to settle and breathe.
Right, and that took about 3 seconds, yeah. You know, here's the thing. We all have stuff that we want to talk about. It's amazing. By the way, Jonathan is my producer here at WCCO for the 7 and 8 o'clock hour. And then Chris Tubbs also is the producer for the 9 o'clock hour, which is center stage. So I hope you will stick with us all the way up until 10 p.m. As you've already known, if you've been with me for a long time, you know we've made some changes here at WCCO for Steele Talkin'. My son, Michael Battle, is no longer available to do the Mom and Michael hour. And he says, Mom, maybe every now and then I can come and just say hello and talk to Jonathan and see what's going on. And he really enjoyed it, but he's so busy with his job and he loves what he's doing. But boy, is he overwhelmed, seriously. So there you go.
Now, before we move on to the next thing, I do want to ask this regarding your son and what's going on with him. Is he being affected by the writer's strike at all?
You know, he talks about it. Every time I talk with him, he'll say, Mom, this is crazy. He is not a writer, of course, but he knows the people that are involved in that part of the industry, some of them. He doesn't talk much about that. It kind of surprises me. It's like it's overwhelming. It's like, Mom, I have way too much on my plate, so I'm not going to even think about it. It's more of that sort of thing. But I'm so proud of him. He just has really become a unique individual who truly loves doing what he does. It's just overwhelming. Do you ever feel overwhelmed?
With his shiny shoes.
Yeah, oh, man.
Shiny,
he's still got
silver
them.
Shoes.
He still has them, right? And he's like wearing them every day. I'm not kidding you. And I think about another pair, a different pair, but it is quieter. I think they're quiet.
It's quieter.
Yeah, I think it's quiet.
So
that's fair.
So it's tin foil instead of aluminum.
Oh, you are wrong. I'm so going to call him
I'm sorry.
No, no, no.
I'm sorry. I misspoke.
No, you are
not. I misspoke. Uh-huh. I meant tin foil instead of chrome.
You're wrong. Look, I would love a pair of shoes like that. The problem is I would never wear them. I would never wear them.
Okay.
It's just too much for me.
I got you.
You know?
I understand.
It's not like you can miss me. I mean, you can't miss me on a bad day. I'm a big, beautiful woman. There's just no way that you'll miss me.
But when you have something that reflects the sunlight and it can be registered as something you could bake a turkey in, you know, that's something a little different.
You're kind of mean tonight, dude. That's terrible. I come into the studio. I get to see you. I get to see the studio again. And yeah, okay. Oh, y'all have no idea. As we sit here and talk, the things we could talk about. It's amazing. Well, I want to tell you that we have a great show lined up tonight. And our first guest is going to come up at 7:35. And I do want to mention that the Tony Awards are happening right now. Unfortunately, even though my family, all of my siblings have performed on Broadway, I am the only one of the Steels that has not performed on Broadway. And although I loved that show and performed in that show many times, but not on Broadway. We did it at Carnegie Hall and that sort of thing. So when I look at the Tony Awards, I have to be reminded of why it exists, not just because the pieces are wonderful and that sort of thing. I am talking about the people who have spent their lives trying to put these plays and musicals forward. And Rohan Preston and I, if you remember last Sunday, we talked about, okay, is it the plays or the musicals? Which one is usurping the other? And really, it was quite obvious that musicals really make way more money when it comes to theater, big time. So I think that's pretty cool, right? Because I'm a singer. I love that. But plays, if I just go to a play like a Shakespeare piece, I'll go and check it out. But I have to tell you, my heart is with that. So when I watch the Tonys just for a moment, all of a sudden I think, okay, the Tonys, this is cool. And then I go, oh, man, my whole family was on Broadway. That's amazing. Amazing.
Now, didn't you perform? You did perform in New York, though, correct?
Oh, yeah. I performed in New York at Brooklyn Academy of... No.
Okay.
No, we were at Brooklyn Academy of Music first. Then we went to Carnegie Hall and did, was it two shows, I believe? No, I just wasn't, you know, the producer said to me, hey, you know, Miss Steele, unfortunately, we just don't have the money to, you know, make sure your children have a daycare and are taken care of during the day.
Yeah.
And I said, you don't have the money? I said, okay, we're going to call in the sixth child in my family. My sister Janice, man, I called her right away. I called all the rest of them and said, look, you guys, I can't go. I got to take care of my babies. And sure enough, I called Janice. I said, Janice, can you take my place on Broadway? She goes, are you nuts? No, I'm not nuts. And then she thought about it. She goes, you know what? I'm going to do that for you. So it was a tears of joy and tears of sadness at the same time.
Wow.
You know? So there you go.
And again, going to, like you said, family first and family well-being. And the fact that maybe now they would offer that for you. And that's sad that it sucks, to be honest. It sucks that was not offered to you at the time.
Yeah, but it was okay for me. When they called me, I just went, oh, hey, I'd rather just take care of my children. That's the number one thing I'm supposed to do.
Oh, right.
Right.
Exactly.
So I was blown away that they said that. But you get over it. I never did cry long. Cry for about 4 hours. You know, my nose wasn't working so well after that.
So my plan now, get Geraldine
on
to Broadway. Okay. That's my plan.
Why not? I don't know. I don't think about it much. But when I see the Tonys, it always reminds me that my family did that. JD, Fred, Billy, Javina, and Janice. I'm the sixth one. And I didn't get to go, but man, was I smiling. And I went to the opening night on Broadway. And to see that, man, and limousines everywhere, to take the cast everywhere. And it was so fabulous. And the Blind Boys were in that piece, and the Soul Stirrers. And they were just in town at the Dakota, by the way. They were just here Thursday night, I think.
Okay.
This past Thursday. So have you heard the Blind Boys before?
Yes, I've heard. I have never been to see them, but right. I have heard them, yes.
Yeah, if you go see them, you will feel as though they are watching you.
Mm.
It's amazing what they do. So, all right, we have to take a break, don't we?
Yes, yeah, we can break and get ready for our first guest.
Our first guest is coming up at 7:35. We'll be back. Welcome back, everyone. It is now 7:33. Let's make that 7:34 here at WCCO. All right, our first guest, I'm so excited to interview him, Michael C. Reichert, is Dr. Reichert, and he is Executive Director for the Center for the Study of Boys and Girls' Lives at the University of Pennsylvania. Now, let me tell you a little bit about it. Every generation has its concerns when it comes to raising children. In an age that includes social media and discussion on the definition of masculinity, how easy is it to raise young boys? Well, after reading a New York Times opinion column, I wanted to dig into the challenges of raising young boys in the 2020s. Now, to prove some insight, we've invited Dr. Reichert on this program. And he is the author of How to Raise a Boy, The Power of Connection to Build Good Men. He's joining us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. How are you, sir?
Hi, good evening. Nice to be with you.
I tell you, this is what we need to be talking about right now, because our children are really not doing well during this pandemic. And when you say, oh my goodness, we need to really pay attention on how we are raising our boys and our girls, it's the boys that stand out the most to me. I don't know why it's so devastating for the children nowadays. Of course, we know that many of the children are not seeing their parents as often, or maybe they're having problems at home. And this pandemic has snatched away so much joy from all of us that when it comes to building those boys and building those girls, not always is it actually happening. Tell us how you began really paying attention on raising a boy.
Well, you know, I think I came by it naturally. I had two sons, and happened at the time I had my second son to be working at an all-boys school outside of Philadelphia. So I was getting a double dose of, being called, I guess, to think rigorously about boys' development and what they needed from their parents and their teachers. I was fortunate. The school asked me to create a research center, and we gathered together some of the top scholars in boyhood studies from around the country and began really digging into what did we know about boys? What did they need? What I first discovered, this was back in 1992, what I discovered was the answer was not much. We had lots and lots of folks that felt that they knew what boys needed, but for generations, the outcomes of boys' development have not been encouraging, have not validated the theory. So, I kind of went back to the drawing boards and decided to apply a more rigorous scientific lens to, in particular, to education, and ask the question, what's working in boys' education? And we gathered 18 schools in 6 different countries, 1,500 boys age 12 to 18, and 1,000 of their teachers, and we asked one simple question: what's working, in an online survey? And what we discovered was that all the theories of boys' education out there didn't do justice to how clear boys describe themselves as relational learners, needing a sense of being known and cared for by their teachers or coaches before they would be willing to engage, before they would be willing to be vulnerable and go to that outer edge of what they know how to do and ask someone to help them. That was back maybe a couple of decades ago now. But that work proceeded. Once we identified boys as relational learners, I began to extrapolate from that study to understanding, for example, what parents need to be thinking about when it comes to raising their sons. And the same essential logic applies, what's true in how boys learn, that they need a sense of being known and cared about, is absolutely true in their homes and their families. So helping parents understand how relational boys are, how dependent they are on that sense of being known for who they really are, I think that's been the thrust of a lot of my work in coaching and working with parents.
I'm very curious about the age group you just mentioned. 12 to 18 years old. To me, that seems like we're starting late. Wouldn't we want to really look at those boys and how they are growing up by the time they are 8 years old?
That's a great question. And actually, that's where we began our work. But we replicated that same study with boys that were much younger, boys that were, just as you said, 8 years old, 9 years old, and 10 years old. And we found the same themes. We found that, just as when you ask a sixth grade boy or a 10th grade boy or a 12th grade boy to tell stories about what's working for them and what's not working for them in schooling, we found the same kinds of themes in the answers that the third, fourth, and fifth grade boys provided to us. So I think that, what we identified was essentially an essential reality about boys' natures, that they are indeed relational creatures, just like girls.
Well, I tell you, I have a son and I have a daughter, so I've been really fortunate to be able to look deep into that over the years. What surprises me is that it used to be the boys were way ahead of the girls when they were, so many more boys in high school and in college before the girls were really getting there, especially if you were a child of color. And I'm just curious to know if these boys feel as though they have the support. What parent is it? If they're both parents in the home, is it the father that is to really raise them, or is it both other parents that should raise them? And if they do, if both of them raise them, do they need to have someone guide them on how this raising a boy should happen?
Well, you pack a lot in your questions. That's a lot. Well, you know, so I'm gonna answer some parts of it, but I'm not sure I'll remember all of them.
All right.
So number one thing to say, I think, is that, you know, research on what parents of boys hope for their sons tells us, I'm thinking of a recent study of 400 parents of boys aged 6 to 14. And when asked what was most important to them as an outcome for their sons, 94% of those parents said that they hoped their sons would be emotionally strong. Much higher agreement with that outcome than, for example, with physical strength. So, you know, it tells me something about what parents of boys are particularly concerned about, what they anticipate that their sons are going to have to face. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's boys of color, which I think, you know, in some ways compounds the threats and the developmental pressures, or boys who come from more privilege, more advantage. I think that we all anticipate that our sons are going to be tested. They're going to face hard challenges, and we want them to be able to negotiate those challenges and stay strong. One of the problems, though, with what parents think makes for a strong child is that we think we need to toughen our sons by teaching them to.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
She said, "Is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar?" I said, "Sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious." He said, "I think that might be it."
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. It is now 7:33. Let's make that 7:34 here at WCCO. All right, our first guest, I'm so excited to interview him. Michael C. Reichert is Dr. Reichert, and he is executive director for the Center for the Study of Boys and Girls' Lives at the University of Pennsylvania. Now, let me tell you a little bit about it. Every generation has its concerns when it comes to raising children. In an age that includes social media and discussion on the definition of masculinity, how easy is it to raise young boys? Well, after reading a New York Times opinion column, I wanted to dig into the challenges of raising young boys in the 2020s. Now, to prove some insight, we've invited Dr. Reichert on this program. And he is the author of How to Raise a Boy, The Power of Connection to Build Good Men. He's joining us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. How are you, sir?
Hi, good evening. Nice to be with you.
I tell you, this is what we need to be talking about right now, because our children are really not doing well during this pandemic. And when you say, oh my goodness, we need to really pay attention on how we are raising our boys and our girls, it's the boys that stand out the most to me. I don't know why it's so devastating for the children nowadays. Of course, we know that many of the children are not seeing their parents as often, or maybe they're having problems at home. And this pandemic has snatched away so much joy from all of us that when it comes to building those boys and building those girls, not always is it actually happening. Tell us how you began really paying attention on raising a boy.
Well, you know, I think I came by it naturally. I had two sons, and you know, happened at the time I had my second son to be working at an all-boys school outside of Philadelphia. So I was getting a double dose of, you know, really being called, I guess, to think rigorously about boys' development and what they needed from their parents and their teachers. So, you know, I was fortunate. The school asked me to create a research center, and we gathered together some of the top scholars in boyhood studies from around the country. and began really digging into what did we know about boys? What did they need? And, you know, what I first discovered, this was back in 1992, what I discovered was the answer was not much. We had lots and lots of folks that felt that they knew what boys needed, but for generations, the outcomes of boys' development have not been encouraging, have not validated the theory. So, you know, I kind of went back to the drawing boards and decided to apply a more rigorous scientific lens to, in particular, to education and ask the question, you know, what's working in boys' education? And we gathered 18 schools in six different countries, 1,500 boys age 12 to 18, and 1,000 of their teachers. And we asked one simple question, what's working, in an online survey? And, you know, what we discovered was that essentially what we discovered was that all the theories of boys' education out there didn't do justice to how clear boys described themselves as relational learners, needing a sense of being known and cared for by their teachers or coaches before they would be willing to engage, you know, before they would be willing to be vulnerable and go to that outer edge of what they know how to do and ask someone to help them. So, you know, that was back in you know, back maybe a couple of decades ago now. But that work proceeded. Once we identified boys as relational learners, I began to extrapolate from that study to understanding, for example, what parents need to be thinking about when it comes to raising their sons. And the same essential logic applies, you know, what's true in how boys learn, that they need a sense of being known and cared about, is absolutely true in their homes and their families. So helping parents understand how relational boys are, how dependent they are on that sense of being known for who they really are, I think that's been the thrust of a lot of my work in coaching and working with parents.
I'm very curious about the age group you just mentioned, 12 to 18 years old. To me, that seems like we're starting late. Wouldn't we want to really look at those boys and how they are growing up by the time they are 8 years old?
That's a great question. And actually, that's where we began our work. But we replicated that same study with boys that were much younger, boys that were, just as you said, 8 years old, 9 years old, and 10 years old. And we found the same themes. We found that, you know, just as when you ask a sixth grade boy or a 10th grade boy or a 12th grade boy to tell stories about what's working for them and what's not working for them in schooling, we found the same kinds of themes in the answers that the third, fourth, and fifth grade boys provided to us. So I think that, you know, what we identified was essentially an essential reality about boys' natures, that they are indeed relational creatures just like girls.
Well, I tell you, I have a son and I have a daughter, so I've been really fortunate to be able to look deep into that over the years. What surprises me is that it used to be the boys were way ahead of the girls when they were, you know, so many more boys in high school and in college before the girls were really getting there, especially if you were a child of color. And I'm just curious to know if these boys feel as though they have the support. What parent is it? If they're both parents in the home, is it the father that is to really raise them, or is it both of the parents that should raise it and raise them? And if they do, if both of them raise them, do they need to have someone guide them on how this raising a boy should happen?
Well, you pack a lot in your questions. That's a lot. Well, you know, so I'm gonna answer some parts of it, but I'm not sure I'll remember all of them.
All right.
So number one thing to say, I think, is that, you know, research on what parents of boys hope for their sons tells us, I'm thinking of a recent study of 400 parents of boys aged 6 to 14. And when asked what was most important to them as an outcome for their sons, 94% of those parents said that they hoped their sons would be emotionally strong. Much higher agreement with that outcome than, for example, with physical strength. So, it tells me something about what parents of boys are particularly concerned about, what they anticipate that their sons are going to have to face. Mm-hmm. Whether it's boys of color, which I think, in some ways compounds the threats and the developmental pressures, or boys who come from more privilege, more advantage. I think that we all anticipate that our sons are going to be tested. They're going to face hard challenges, and we want them to be able to negotiate those challenges and stay strong. One of the problems, though, with what parents think makes for a strong child is that we think we need to toughen our sons by teaching them to stuff down their feelings, harden themselves, put on a tough front, a stoic front. And, more recent research on what's called traumatic growth mm-hmm. has taught us that some people can come through terrible challenges, traumatic experiences, and actually come out stronger. And you know what differentiates those folks who come out stronger? It isn't that they pretend or stuff their feelings down or, distance themselves from their relationships. It's just the opposite. The ones that are more resilient, more gritty, are ones who actually find ways of being honest about what they're feeling and find someone who can listen to them and know them. So when I talk to parents of boys, essentially what I do is I say, what your son needs most from you is that you create an opportunity for him to be himself, to be authentic, and to really let you know what he's feeling. Boys will get lots and lots of messages from the cultures that they live in, they operate in, from their peers and from media and from schools, that they need to put on a front, hide behind a mask. At least at home, we're hoping that there's a parent who has enough of a connection with the boy that the boy can feel freer. He can take off the mask and, reveal what's really going on so he's not alone with it mm-hmm. in the echo chamber of his own mind. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does, but I wonder, how do you define enough?
Well, that's the lovely thing about, I'm a developmental psychologist, and that's the lovely thing about human development. We talk about good enough parenting, and what we mean is that we parents try, and we give it our best. We try, and we make mistakes all the time, mm-hmm. but what our children get to see is that we're really pulling for them, we're really trying. And I think a child is quite forgiving under those circumstances, because what your son will read when you reach for him and keep reaching, even though you're clumsy or you're preoccupied or you're stressed, what your son reads in that is that you're on his side and you're making your best effort.
I must ask this question because hearing you talk about how the parents are really involved, if they are involved and they are really working together to raise that boy, I get it. At the same time, we are very clear as a nation that technology is now a part of the family and that technology is teaching them things that their parents may not want them to know. Whether
Absolutely.
Whether it begins at school. So how in the world do you remove that parental guidance that they're having from technology?
Yeah. How old's your son, can I ask?
My son is 37 years old.
Okay. Well, you've done your job. Are you a grandparent yet?
I am, indeed.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, and it's a challenge even as a grandparent.
I know.
Yeah.
I would just say this, I'm currently involved in doing a white paper on boys and pornography. Mm. And one of the really hard truths about technology and how it intrudes in boys' lives is that most boys learn sex education by sometimes involuntary exposure to pornography on their smartphones.
Right.
And, the kinds of things that populate pornography websites have almost nothing to do with the kinds of things that accurately depict an act of connection and love and respect between a boy and someone he feels affection for.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard, it's crude, it's degrading, it's often misogynistic and exploitative, sometimes violent. But that's what boys are being exposed to ubiquitously now. And so your question, what can parents do when technology takes over and creates sort of an almost an alternate universe, mm-hmm. In the boy's life, whether it's gaming or social media or pornography, that's the truth of it. And I think what the American Academy of Pediatrics recent guidance is suggesting is that if we build a relationship with our sons and our sons trust us not to always scold them or shame them or dominate them or tell them what to do and what not to do, but actually create a space where they can reveal themselves free of that kind of static, what they'll do is they'll actually share with us, for example, they'll feel freer to share with us that, hey, Mom, I came across this site. It was really confusing, troubled me, and I didn't know what to make of it. We want them to be able to be open about what they're experiencing, whether it's on the Internet or from their peer group. And the only way that happens is if they have a place where they can come and they're not going to upset us with what they share.
Mm. That's really interesting. I am very curious about what you learned through all of this, what you are still dealing with right now. And as you see it open up more and you learn more, what has surprised you so far?
I've gotten to talk to lots and lots of audiences of parents all over the country, really. And very different kinds of audiences, very different cultures. And I would just say this to you and to your listeners. I think there's never been a better time to be raising a son.
Mm-hmm.
Despite our worries, despite all of the, complications of technology and the ways that society is changing, particularly in terms of gender roles, the compound stresses that affect children of color. Despite all of that, I still think it's true. And the reason I think it's true is that we're actually honestly, scientifically evaluating how we go about raising sons, I think for the first time in history, rather than depending on prejudice and ideology ancient beliefs. We're actually asking how well is what we think we know working. In the field, for example, of boys' education, the discovery that boys are actually relational learners can revolutionize how we actually go about setting up schools and teach them. And likewise, I think when parents recognize that a big part of our job is less about teaching our sons how to be men and more about helping them reveal who they really are as people in an open way, when we understand that, we're really shifting the paradigm in dramatic ways.
And let's not forget that the mother is also involved in raising that boy, and so are the sisters. My parents had six children, three girls, three boys. And the boys, they learned how to be boys from my father and my mother.
That's exactly right.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, one of the things that affects, I don't have to tell you this, you probably know it, but just for the sake of hearing it said, there's a phenomenon that's called the mama's boy myth. A wonderful book by that name, by a journalist, Kate Lombardi Stone. And essentially, she interviewed lots and lots of mothers of sons around the country. And what she heard echoed over and over again was that mothers would become afraid that if they kept their sons too close, they would undermine their manhood. They would turn them into mama's boys. And that threat that so many mothers felt, you know, that they might ruin their sons by following their instincts to stay close to him, that really does impact many families and the relationship many mothers enjoy with their sons. A big part of what I do when I talk to audiences of parents is I say, mothers, that's not true. Trust your gut. Your son needs you. He wants to be known by you. And the last thing in the world he needs is for you to abandon him because you're afraid.
My goodness, I could talk to you for a whole nother hour. I'm so grateful that you joined us tonight. To have you on really matters. What you are talking about, people are going to want to know about this book. It's called The Mommy's Boy Book. Is that it?
The Mama's Boy Myth is that book. That's right.
Okay, The Mama's Boy Myth. All right. Thank you so much for giving us this information, and thank you for joining us. I hope to have you back on to talk about the girls as well.
Good,
that is Dr. Michael Roerke. Thank you so much, sir. Take care.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everyone. We're going to have to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:57 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I've been here 25 years, and I have truly enjoyed this run, man. I'll keep going. I'm sure Jonathan would like to throw me out sometime, but you know, it's okay. He'll get over it. His back is to me. He has nothing to say. So there you go. I just want to mention very quickly that the guest that was on to talk about the boys, raising boys, will also hopefully come back and do the girls, because they talk about both, talking about how the daughters are raised and the impact of the fathers on the daughters. This is really worth talking about. So hopefully we'll be able to have him back on to talk about that. Coming up next. Oh, man, I'm excited because of Jack Rice. He used to work here, you guys, and he's really quite remarkable. I'm so looking forward to interviewing him. So stay tuned. Stick and stay with us right here on WCCO. It is now 7:57 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I've been here 25 years, and I have truly enjoyed this run, man. I'll keep going. I'm sure Jonathan would like to throw me out sometime, but you know, it's okay. He'll get over it. His back is to me. He has nothing to say. So there you go. I just want to mention very quickly that the guest that was on to talk about the boys, raising boys, will also hopefully come back and do the girls, because they talk about both, talking about how the daughters are raised and the impact of the fathers on the daughters. This is really worth talking about. So hopefully we'll be able to have him back on to talk about that. Coming up next. Oh, man, I'm excited because of Jack Rice. He used to work here, you guys, and he's really quite remarkable. I'm so looking forward to interviewing him. So stay tuned. Stick and stay with us right here on WCCO.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.